The chamber Luis took the kid and Elsie into wasn't fancy, but it was furnished comfortably with a bed, a wardrobe, a small table, and a couple of chairs. A rug was on the floor. Luis lit the lamp on the table, then turned to the kid.
Buenas noches, señor. Enjoy your stay.
I intend to.
Keeping up the facade, the kid squeezed Elsie's shoulders again. With a smile, the clerk went out and closed the door behind him, leaving the two of them alone. The kid had already noticed the room's single window. Yellow curtains hung over it. He let go of Elsie and strode over to it, sweeping the curtains back and unfastening the latch so he could swing the casements open. There was no balcony outside, but the ends of wooden beams called vigas protruded from the adobe wall under the tile roof. The kid thought he might be able to swing from them and make his way to the window that opened into the next room, where Kelly and Jess were. He nodded in satisfaction and turned back to face Elsie. It was time to explain to her the real reason he was there and what he intended to do. He didn't get the chance.
Huh?
Without warning, she charged at him, slamming both hands into his chest and knocking him back against the window. His knees hit the sill, and he toppled over into empty air. As he fell backward, his hands shot out and gripped the sides of the window, stopping his plunge. She continued her attack, lunging at him, clawing at his eyes with her fingernails. He jerked his head from side to side to avoid being blinded. Planting his feet underneath him, he straightened up and picked Elsie up off the floor. Her feet came off the floor. The kid forced her backward, and they fell onto the bed with him on top. Her mouth opened to scream as she flailed at the kid with both hands. He quickly put his left hand over her mouth and used his right hand to grab and trap both of her wrists. He levered her arms above her head and pinned them to the bed. The kid put his face close to hers.
Elsie, listen to me. I'm not going to hurt you. You remember me from the wagon train. You know I'm not going to hurt you.
She blinked rapidly as she stared up at him. He didn't see any hope or understanding in her eyes, only fear.
Elsie, you're all right now. I'm going to get you out of here. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm going to help you and your mother and Jess and Leah. We're all going to get out of here. Listen, I'm going to take my hand away from your mouth, and we're going to talk, all right? Don't scream.
She stared up at him for a long moment before finally nodding. He lifted his hand, but held it ready to clamp down again over her mouth if she started to let out a yell.
Mr. Morgan, you really want to help me? Not...
Shh! That's right. I'm going to help you. I'm not going to hurt you.
The kid rolled off her and sat up on the edge of the bed.
Listen to me, Elsie. Are you hurt badly?
No. I'm all right, I guess. The Indians, they treated us pretty rough, but except for molesting us, they didn't really hurt us.
Then you can still ride a horse?
Yes. If it means getting away from here, I can ride a million miles.
I don't think we'll have to go that far. We need to get back over the border, though. You think the others can still ride?
Well, I know my mother and Mrs. Ritter can. I'm not sure about poor Leah. She's capable of riding, but, well, she's not really right in the head anymore.
We'll deal with that when we have to.
I thought when the Indians weren't holding us prisoner anymore that things might get better. But the men here, they're just as bad as the Apaches, aren't they?
I'm afraid so.
What are they going to do with us? Are they going to keep us here and...
You're not staying here. You're going home. Here's what we're going to do. Jess and one of those other men are next door. I'm going to try to reach the window of that room and get inside. If I can take Kelly by surprise, I can knock him out. Then I'll figure out some way to deal with the others.
They'll kill you.
I'm not going to let that happen. You just sit here and wait for me.
I'm not sure I can sit. I'm too nervous for that.
Well, come to the window then. You can help me watch for guards.
They went to the window. The two halves of it still stood wide open. The kid leaned out and looked around. The room he and Elsie were in was the last one along the corridor, which meant it was on the corner of the building. He could see the main gate and one of the guard towers, which meant the rurales on duty could see him too, if they happened to look in his direction. Their attention was focused outward, though, and they were probably sleepy. The kid pointed out the window to Elsie and explained what he was going to do.
Be careful! If anything happens to you...
It's not going to.
He took off his boots and climbed onto the windowsill. When he stood up, he was able to reach the nearest viga. He got a good grip on the rough wooden beam and swung away from the window. When he judged that he had enough, he let go and reached for the next Vega as he sailed through the empty air. He felt relief shoot through him as his hands fastened on the beam like iron clamps. He had reached the beam where he was able to put a toe down and rested on the windowsill. The kid perched there for several long moments to recover his strength. He couldn't see into the room, but he could tell that the lamp had burned low, giving off only a faint illumination. He could hear just fine, though, and he didn't like what he was hearing.
You better do what I tell you, honey, or you're gonna be sorry.
You can go to hell.
Oh, I could say the same thing to you.
It wouldn't do any good. I'm already there.
That's enough arguing, dammit. Come here, you little... Blast it!
The kid had waited as long as he was going to wait. He bent down, grasped the sides of the window, and pulled himself through the opening. He caught a glimpse of Kelly struggling with Jess. Kelly had succeeded in ripping the rest of her tattered clothing away from her. The lamplight glowed on her pale, bruised skin. The kid launched himself in a flying tackle that took Kelly from behind. He knocked him forward onto the bed. The kid didn't have time to see if Jess was all right. He had his hands full with Kelly. The kid got his left arm around Kelly's neck and hung on. With his left hand, the kid grabbed Kelly's left wrist and didn't let go. He knew he had cut off Kelly's air, and if he could just manage to hang on, eventually the Irishman would pass out or die. Kelly tried to fumble his gun from its holster. The kid brought his knee up sharply and hit Kelly's wrist. The revolver flew free and slid across the floor. Kelly finally went limp. Thinking that it might be a trick, the kid kept the pressure on Kelly's throat for another minute or two. When he let go at last, Kelly's head fell forward. The kid checked for a pulse and found a weak, unsteady one in Kelly's neck. The scalp hunter was still alive, but he was unconscious and likely to stay that way for a while. The kid thought about killing him, but in the end decided against it. He had killed men in cold blood before, but only some of those responsible for the death of his wife. He pushed himself up off the bed. Slowly, the kid turned his head to look over his shoulder. Jess stood behind him. She had picked up Kelly's gun and was pointing it at the kid as she held it in both hands. The barrel was rock steady.
Jess, wait a minute. It's me, Kid Morgan.
I know who you are. You're the man who threw in with these scalp hunters.
Pretended to throw in with them. I only helped them so they'd bring me along and help me get to you and the other prisoners.
Downstairs, you told them you didn't care what happened to me.
What was I supposed to tell him? I couldn't tell him the truth. I didn't want him using the way I feel about you against either of us.
How do you feel about me?
I want to help you. That's all. I want to help you and the other women get away from here.
What about the deal you have with that Mexican officer?
That bargain was between Guzman and Kelly. The only promise I made was to myself, and now I'm making it to you. I'm going to help you get away.
Finally, she lowered Kelly's gun. Carefully, she looped her thumb over the hammer and let it down.
I need something to wear. My clothes are ruined.
We'll do something about that. For now, wrap the sheet around yourself.
What about him?
I'll make sure he can't hurt you.
Are you going to kill him?
No, I'm not going to kill him.
He waited until Jess had wrapped one of the bed sheets around her, then tore strips from the other sheet to bind Kelly's hands and feet. He yanked Kelly's arms behind his back before he lashed the scalp hunter's wrists together, and he pulled off the man's boots so Kelly couldn't bang the heels on the floor to summon help that way. The last thing the kid did was to stuff another piece of sheet into Kelly's mouth and bind it in place to serve as a gag.
Why did you come all the way down here into Mexico after us? How did you even know what happened to us?
I saw the light from the burning wagons in the sky and was about to come back when three Apaches jumped me. They must have been watching the wagon camp and saw me leave that night, so a few of them followed me.
You killed them?
Yeah. By the time I got to the wagon camp, it was too late. The wagons were burned and everybody was dead, except Milo Farnham. Before he died, he told me what had happened and told me that the Apaches had carried off four prisoners. There was never any doubt in my mind that I'd come after you.
Scott?
I'm sorry. He and Horace Dunlap and all the others died fighting.
You didn't answer my other question. Why did you come after us, kid? Why was there never any doubt in your mind that you would? The four of us, we don't mean anything to you.
Everybody means something to somebody. If it had been my wife, I would have wanted somebody to go after her and help her.
You say that like you've got a wife.
I did have.
What are you going to do now? Swing in some other window like a giant bat?
Señor Kelly?
The kid recognized the voice of Luis, Guzman's aide.
Capitan Guzman sent me to find out if you would like a bottle of brandy or anything else we might provide.
The kid beckoned Jess closer.
Let him in.
The kid bent and pulled Kelly's still senseless form behind the bed where it wouldn't be visible from the door.
And let that sheet drop a little. He's a man.
Her mouth hardened into a grim line. She let the sheet fall around her midsection so that her breasts were completely bare.
How about this? Enough of a distraction?
We'll find out.
The kid moved quietly to the door and stood so that he would be behind it when it opened. For a second, he thought Jess was about to laugh, and he took that as a good sign. She hadn't lost her nerve.
Just a second.
Jess went over to the door.
Señorita,
Come on in and bring the brandy.
She stepped back and Luis came into the room. The kid was ready. Striking like a cat, he brought the butt of his gun down on the back of Luis's head. Jess let go of the sheet completely to grab the bottle of brandy he dropped before it could hit the floor and shatter. The kid eased the door closed.
He's not that much bigger than you. Get his boots and uniform off him and put them on.
I don't suppose there's any way to get them fumigated first.
I'm afraid not. Your other alternative is to ride away from here naked.
I'll take the uniform.
Jess bent over and started pulling Luis's boots off, then paused.
Kid, he looks dead.
The kid had noticed the clerk's glassy-eyed stare, too.
Guess I hit him a little too hard.
That's a shame. He didn't seem quite as bad as the rest.
He worked for Guzman. That means he helped sell hundreds of helpless prisoners into slavery. Maybe more than that.
That's true. Good riddance.
While Jess was getting dressed, the kid went back to the door and eased it open a crack. He put his eye to the gap and looked along the corridor as best he could. A rurale lounged at the landing, as if standing guard but not being too diligent about it. Still, the man must have seen Luis go into the room. After a while, he might wonder why the clerk didn't come back out.
How do I look?
The kid glanced around. The uniform was too big on her, but not by much.
It'll do. Blow out that lamp.
What are you going to do?
It's a matter of what you're going to do. You're about to join the rurales.
I don't understand.
Blow out the lamp so it's dark in here. The only light in the corridor is down at the far end, so that guard won't be able to see very well.
I think it'll still be light enough for him to tell that I'm not Luis, or whatever his name was.
If you stepped all the way out, he might. But you're just going to put an arm out and motion him down here. He'll see the uniform and think you're Luis, all right.
I don't know. Seems like a long shot to me.
It's the only kind we have these days.
I guess you're right.
She bent over and blew out the lamp.
If I can get him to come down here, what then?
Leave that to me.
Jess went to the door and opened it. She put her right foot just outside.
Psst.
Extending her arm into the corridor, she crooked her fingers in a beckoning motion at the guard.
Stay there.
What is he? Does the American want an audience to watch?
Pull back. Slow.
Jess retreated into the room, and a second later, the guard's bulk stood in the doorway. The kid's hands shot out, grabbed the lapels of the man's uniform jacket, and hauled him into the room, swinging him around so that his head crashed into the wall. Before the guard could recover, the kid threw his right arm over and around his throat. The kid felt a shudder go through the man's body. He checked for a pulse, but didn't find one. While he lowered the body to the floor, Jess closed the door and then came over.
Why didn't you let me stab him?
Because that would have gotten blood on his uniform, and we need this uniform,
too. Oh.
The kid was already pulling the dead man's boots off. The pearl-gray trousers and jacket came next. He pulled off his own clothes and donned the uniform, including the boots. He buckled the guard's gun belt around his hips. Lastly, he picked up the steeple-crowned sombrero from the floor where it had fallen and settled it on his head.
What do you think?
You'll pass for one of them. From a distance.
Hoping that's good enough.
What if somebody heard that crash when you threw him against the wall?
Likely to think anything about it. They'll just assume Kelly was getting rough with you.
He would have, too. Son of a bitch. Can I kick him?
We don't have time. Guzman will start wondering pretty soon what's taking Luis so long. We have to get the other women and get out of here.
Kid, I appreciate what you're doing. And Lord knows, I'd rather die fighting than go through what they've got in mind for us. But we're not getting out of here, and you know it. We're going to get killed. All of us.
Not if I have anything to say about it.
You really believe that, don't you?
I wouldn't be here if I didn't.
She smiled, leaned close to him, and brushed her lips across his in a brief kiss.
Then let's go.
The kid didn't know whether Valdez had finished scalping the dead Apaches in the courtyard, so the Mexican was something of a wild card. But he would deal with that once he had taken care of Chess, who was in the next room with Violet Price. Easing the door open, the kid checked the hallway. It was empty, so he stepped out. He looked back at Jess, giving her an encouraging nod, and walked quietly along the corridor to the next door.
What is it? Damn it!
El Capitan Guzman wants to speak to you.
The kid slipped his Colt from its holster. Chess opened the door and saw what appeared to be one of the rurales standing there.
What the hell does Guzman...
Ow!
The kid hit him with the butt of his gun. The scalp hunter, who was wearing only the bottom half of a pair of long underwear, folded up. The kid stepped over Chess's body into the room.
Oh my god, not another. Mr. Morgan?
The kid reached down, caught hold of one of Chess's ankles, and dragged him into the room so he could close the door. By the time he turned back to Violet, she had pulled up the sheet on the bed where she sat and wrapped it around her.
Are you all right?
As all right as I'm going to be. But you took my Elsie.
Elsie's fine. I didn't hurt her. In fact, I'm going to help all of you ladies get out of here.
But you're one of those awful men.
I let them think that. Really, I've been trying to catch up with you and the others ever since the Apaches attacked the wagon camp.
My husband, the rest of my children.
I know it's hard, but don't think about them right now. You and Elsie are alive, and that's the most important thing. You can grieve later.
You're right. I have to be strong. For Elsie.
And she'll be strong for you. I'm going to tie him up and gag him so he can't cause any trouble. As soon as I'm gone, get dressed. I'll be back for you in a few minutes. Do you know if Valdez is in there with Leah yet?
I don't know. I haven't heard anything, but I wasn't really paying attention. I was trying to make myself not be here in my mind. You know what I mean?
I know.
He got to work trussing up Chess. When he was finished, he checked the hall and slipped out of the room. He went to the next door and leaned close to it, listening intently in an attempt to determine if Valdez and Leah Gabbert were in there. The kid didn't wait. His hand shot to the knob and twisted it. He threw it open and rushed into the room. Valdez was on the bed with Leah. The red-headed girl was struggling frantically underneath him. Valdez glanced over his shoulder, saw the uniform-clad figure coming into the room, and obviously mistook the newcomer for one of Guzman's rurales.
Yeah, muchacho! Give me a hand with this one. She's loco! If you help me, you can have a turn with her, too.
The kid moved swiftly to the side of the bed.
Oh, crap! Oh.
Valdez slumped on top of Leah. The kid grabbed Valdez's arm and rolled him off her onto the floor. Leah didn't recognize him. He had to quiet her down and calm her, but wasn't sure how to. At that moment, Jess hurried into the room and went directly to the bed. She sat down and gathered Leah into her arms, talking softly in a crooning voice.
It's fine. I thought you might have trouble with her, so I took a chance being spotted. There was nobody out there to see me.
The kid picked up Valdez's sombrero from the chair, where it sat along with the rest of the Mexican's clothes, and tossed it onto the bed next to Jess.
You can tuck your hair up into that. It's not exactly the same style as the rurales wear, but maybe it's close enough to get by for a little while.
She nodded her understanding.
Stay here with her. I'll fetch Mrs. Price and Elsie.
Then what?
I'll try to make it to the corral and get some horses.
He left Jess and Leah and went next door. Violet Price had pulled her tattered dress back on and had Chess's gun in her hand when the kid came in. He motioned for her to lower the revolver.
I know how to shoot. My husband made sure of that before we came west. I thought it would be a good idea to take this man's gun with me when we leave.
It's an excellent idea. Are you ready?
She hefted the revolver.
I have everything I need. Except my daughter.
Going to get her right now. Go next door with Jess and Leah. I'll be right back with Elsie.
When he opened the door into the room where he had taken Elsie earlier, he didn't see her.
Elsie?
Oh, thank God.
Elsie appeared around the side of the door.
I didn't know it was you. I thought maybe I should try to hide. You're dressed like one of the Mexicans.
It's going to help us get out of here. Come on, your mother's waiting.
Is she all right?
She is.
The next few minutes were busy ones as the kid gathered the four women. He gave Valdez's revolver to Jess. The rurales guard he had killed hadn't been carrying a handgun, but he had a rifle, so the kid turned that weapon over to Elsie and showed her how to shoot it. All of them stuffed as much extra ammunition as they could into their pockets. He didn't give Leah a gun. With the mental state she was in, she didn't need to be armed. It was going to be difficult enough just getting her to cooperate and do as she was told, although she had calmed down considerably since Jess had comforted her. The kid went to the window and studied the compound. It was quiet, with most of the rurales having already turned in. There were still guards on the walls.
Give me a hand, Jess. I'm going to make a rope and climb down from this window.
I'm not sure Leah can do that.
We'll have to talk her into it. Trying to go out the front door is too risky.
It didn't take long for the kid to braid and knot the strips together and fashion a makeshift rope that was sturdy enough to support them. He tied one end to the bed, then stood next to the window, holding the rope.
I'll climb down first. Leah, you'll come right after me, won't you?
15 minutes later, everyone was safely on the ground and hiding in the shadows.
Corral is over there. Four of you head for it and stay in the shadows as much as you can, hoping that if anybody sees you, they'll take you for one of the rurales and think that you're escorting the prisoners to the barracks.
Why would they be taking us to... Oh.
Yeah. It would be just like Guzman to let his men have some sport once Kelly and the others were through with you.
Some sport. The bastards.
You'll get no argument from me. I'll join you at the corral in a few minutes.
Where are you going?
To make us a way out of here.
She was puzzled, but didn't ask questions. While Jess herded the other three women toward the corral, the kid headed for the powder magazine. The stone building stood next to the wall of the compound, with only a narrow gap between the two. The kid hoped it wasn't locked. Luck was with him there. The door was latched, but not locked. He slipped inside. The darkness was almost absolute, but he couldn't risk striking a match with that much powder around. Working by feel, he found two kegs. He used his knife to pry the lids off both and reached inside to find the gritty, slightly greasy feel of gunpowder. He had left the door open a crack. Looking through the gap and not seeing anyone, he moved outside with the kegs. It took only a moment to shove both kegs into the gap between the magazine and the wall. Dipping a hand into one of the kegs, the kid laid a trail of powder to the corner of the building. It would burn fast, so he wouldn't have much time. An idea occurred to him. Patting the pockets of the uniform he had taken off the dead rurale, he found a thin black cigarillo in one of them. The kid had put his own matches in one of the pockets. He took one out and leaned into the narrow opening behind the magazine so the sudden flare of light wouldn't be noticed as he struck the match. He puffed the cigar into life and quickly smoked it down to about half its length. The coal on its end glowed redly as he sat it on the ground with the unlit end and the powder trail. That would give him a little more time, but he had to rely on the cigarillo not going out before it reached the powder. Leaving the burning cigarillo and the gunpowder behind, he hurried toward the corral. The women were waiting beside a shed where feed and tack were stored.
Stay there. I'll saddle some horses for us.
With another glance at the guard towers and the parapet, he opened the gate and slipped into the corral. The rurales still had their attention focused outward. The idea that there could be a threat inside the compound obviously hadn't occurred to them. The kid found his own saddle in the tack room that opened into the corral. He didn't waste any time getting it on his dun. As he worked, he wished he knew whether or not that cigarillo was still burning down toward the powder. All he could do was get some other horses saddled and wait. When he had the dun and four other horses ready to ride, he held their reins and led them over to the gate. He handed the reins of two of the horses to Jess.
You'll probably have to lead Leah's horse. Can you do that?
If it means getting out of here, you're damn right I can.
Violet and Elsie climbed onto a couple of mounts, and Jess urged Leah onto another one.
All right, let's mount up.
What was that?
Any luck, our way out of here. Follow me.
As the kid led the women on horseback across the courtyard, he wasn't surprised that the magazine was still standing. The stone structure had been built to contain an explosion. But with the magazine on one side, the force of the blast had to go somewhere. He hoped that it had blown a gaping hole in the wall. He glanced over his shoulder to check on the women and saw all four right behind him, riding with the urgency of life and death. Jess had her reins and also those of Leah's horse held tightly in her hands. Violet and Elsie were close behind them. The guards on the wall didn't start shooting at them. They seemed to be confused because two of the riders appeared to be fellow rurales. Those few moments they held their fire were invaluable to the kid and the women. Another glance back showed the kid another big thing. He had left the corral gate open behind him, and the rest of the horses were so frightened by the blast, they were streaming out of the corral and running wildly around the compound. As herd animals will do, they started following the horses on which the kid and the women were mounted. He rounded the magazine and saw the big hole in the wall, at least 8 feet wide. Rubble littered the ground, but other than that, the way was open. The kid leaped the dun over the chunks of masonry. Behind him, the other horses sailed over the obstacles as well. They were out of the compound. Hot night air blew in the kid's face as he swung the dun toward the lights of San Remo. Behind them, guns finally began to pop as the rurales realized what was going on. The dun was faster than any of the other horses. The kid held him back a little to keep him from running off and leaving the women. He waved them on, fearing that at any moment he would hear one of them cry out in pain as a blindly fired shot found a target. Circling around San Remo, they headed east toward the mountains, with the kid in the lead, steering by the stars. When they reached the slopes, he reined in the dun, and the others followed suit.
What are you doing? We have to keep moving.
Quiet. Let me listen.
He didn't hear any shots, but more important, he didn't hear any hoofbeats. The rurales weren't coming after them yet. At least, they weren't within earshot.
All right. We'll walk the horses for a few minutes, then run them again. We'll have to ride like that, or they'll get so worn out they won't be able to go on. That won't do us any good.
That makes sense, I suppose. I still can't believe we actually got out of that place. But now that we are, I want to put as much distance between us and it as we can.
They moved at a steady pace, climbing toward the pass. They could let the horses run again once they were on the other side of the pass. It was a long way to the border. The kid hoped he could find the water holes where he and the scalp hunters had stopped on the way to San Remo. If he couldn't, there was no chance they could make it across that inferno of a desert between the mountains and the border. His canteens still hung on his saddle, and one was full, the other about half. He had some jerky in his saddlebags. That wasn't much for a journey that might take several days. He might be able to shoot some game along the way, if they came across any animals other than lizards and snakes. It was possible they wouldn't. But worrying about everything that could go wrong was a waste of time. The important thing was to keep moving. They were in a race to the border, and the stakes were life and death. The kid kept them moving all night, except for brief halts to rest the horses. He could tell the animals were tired, and soon they would need to rest for a longer period of time. He didn't want to stop until morning, when he could see if anyone was coming after them. By the time the sun began to peek over the eastern horizon, they had reached the saddle where he and Kelly and the others had ambushed the Apaches. The stench of rotting flesh hung over the area.
Don't look at them. The buzzards have been after them, and it's not pretty.
After what they did to us, I'm glad they're dead. It doesn't bother me a bit to see them.
Well, it bothers me. Come on, Elsie.
Just give Leah's reins to Elsie. If you're all right, you can give me a hand.
Doing what? They've already been scalped.
There might be food in their gear. I intend to have a look. We can use any ammunition that they have that will fit our guns, too.
A half an hour later, after the kid and Jess were done poking through the dead Apache's packs, they took their new supplies back to the others. The kid was relieved that they were able to get extra ammunition and canteens. The kid scanned the foothills with his telescope to the west. After a while, he caught a glimpse of the sun reflecting off something just below the pass. It had to be metal of some sort, and that meant pursuit.
They're back there, quite a few hours behind us, though, so we're lucky there. I was hoping it would take them a while to round up enough horses. We'd better get moving.
Can we stay ahead of them long enough to reach the border?
That's a good question. Only one way to find out.
They moved on in the rising heat, following the cutoff through the brush-choked wash that Kelly had used before. The kid thought there was a good chance Kelly and the others would be with the rurales, so he and the women couldn't afford to go the long way around the way the Apaches had. By midday, they were all soaked with sweat and the horses were lathered and staggering. The kid called a halt for an hour and told the women to crawl under some of the brush to take advantage of its shade.
Watch out for snakes.
Aren't you going to rest?
Next time. Somebody needs to stand watch.
Give me a half an hour, and then I'll spell you.
The kid started to tell her that wasn't necessary, then nodded.
I'm obliged.
We'd either be back there in that compound or on our way to Mexico City if it wasn't for you. That's a debt we'll never be able to pay back.
Nobody's expecting you to.
The women fell asleep right away. The kid woke Jess 30 minutes later. As soon as he lay down and closed his eyes, he was asleep too. Getting out of the sun and dozing, even for half an hour, made him feel better. Jess woke the others. They mounted up and headed out again. A while later, they reached the end of the wash.
We're going to stop here for a few hours and wait out the worst of the heat. The rest has helped the horses, but not enough. We can make better time by traveling at night.
Do you think those bastards who are after us will stop?
I hope so, but even if they don't, we don't have any choice. The horses are about to drop. We sure can't get away from the rurales on foot.
It'll be all right, Jess. I'm sure Mr. Morgan knows what he's doing.
I'm sure he does, too.
When the sun finally disappeared behind the mountains, the kid led them into the desert.
There's a water hole in some rocks about 20 miles north of here, if I remember right. We can make it before morning.
Unless you get lost and we miss it.
Have a little faith.
That's not easy to do.
I know. We need to do it anyway.
Long hours into the night, when the moon had risen and was on its downward sweep, the kid caught sight of something dark up ahead. His heart leaped at the possibility that it was the rocks where the water hole was located. He couldn't be sure, so he didn't say anything to the others. Then the horses suddenly lifted their heads and their ears pricked forward, and he knew they had scented the water. Relief flooded through him.
Let's go. Water hole is right in front of us.
It was a crude tank formed by a rocky hollow in the ground. As he recalled from the previous journey, the water was stagnant and not pleasant to drink. But it was wet, and that was the most important thing. The kid dismounted and grabbed the reins of the other mounts so they wouldn't drink too much and founder. The others dismounted, and then Jess and Elsie helped him haul the horses back. Eventually, they all got their fill of the brackish water. Leah sat beside the pool and looked up at the kid.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan.
They all rested. The kid and Jess took turns standing guard again. Along toward morning, Jess woke him.
Kid, I think you better look at this.
He stood up and walked with her to the edge of the boulders around the waterhole. Across the desert behind them, several miles away, an orange light flickered.
Is that a campfire?
Yeah. They're going to have coffee and a hot breakfast. They don't care if we know they're back there.
Why not?
Because they think there's no way we can beat them to the border. They think it doesn't matter if we know they're after us. Guzman and Kelly probably hope we see the fire, and that makes us nervous.
Are you nervous, kid?
No reason to be. We either make it or we don't. Either way, we gave it a good try.
Is that all that matters in life? Giving it a good try?
Sometimes. That's all that's left.
After a few moments, everyone was roused and in their saddles again. The kid knew it was time for them to get moving once more. Once the sun was up, the tracks left by the Apache war party as it traveled southward were visible again. Time and the elements were starting to blur the hoofprints and footprints, but the kid could still see them. It was an easy trail to backtrack. He had the women push their mounts into a ground-eating lope. Leah had recovered enough of her senses to handle her own horse. The kid sensed a fragility about her, as if her tenuous grip on sanity might slip again, but she was doing better. The rest just needed to keep an eye on her. After a while, they walked the horses, then urged them to a faster pace again. Throughout the long day, they kept that up. They came to the deep canyon where the Apaches had laid the trap for anyone following them, where the kid had thrown in with Kelly and the other scalp hunters. Now the kid signaled a halt and had everyone dismount.
You can see the trail that goes down this side of the canyon, then back up the other side. We'll take it on foot. Jess and I will lead all the horses.
Before they started down the trail, the kid paused long enough to take out his telescope and scan the desert behind them. His jaw tightened as he spotted the haze of dust hanging in the air several miles back.
What is it, kid? Do you see them?
Not them, but the dust their horses are kicking up.
Then we don't have any time to waste.
Jess took Leah's reins in addition to her own.
Let's go.
She went first, then the other three women. The kid brought up the rear, leading the dun and the other two horses. When they reached the bottom of the canyon, Leah looked up at Mrs. Price.
It's so cool and shady down here. I wish we could just stay here.
So do I, honey, but we have to keep moving.
Leah pouted a little, but didn't give them any trouble. They followed the trail up to the north rim of the canyon, climbing back into the heat. They weren't that far from the border. They might even be able to reach it by nightfall. But while they were descending into the canyon, then climbing out of it, the pursuers had been covering more ground. The dust was closer, the kid saw when he looked back. It was an actual cloud, not just a haze in the air. Kelly and the others had to cross the canyon too, and while they were doing that, the kid and the women would make up some of the ground they had lost. But the horses were awfully tired, and their water was starting to run low, even though he had rationed it carefully. There was another water hole between here and the border. The kid was counting on it to give them the boost of strength they would need to make the final run. When they finally reached the water hole, the horses sucked up whatever water they could, drinking the hole practically dry.
They need it more than we do. There's a good well in Sagal, and we'll be there before too much longer.
While the other women were resting, Jess came over to him.
That dust cloud's closer than ever, kid. Those bastards must be running their horses into the ground.
Or they brought along extra mounts and have been switching back and forth. I've been worried about that all along.
I didn't even think about that.
We should have done that, too. I just wasn't sure we could handle extra horses in addition to the ones we've been riding.
You mean you weren't sure we could handle them? And you're right. We probably couldn't have. They would have gotten away from us.
Nothing's perfect.
That's the truth.
He let the others rest for another minute.
All right, everybody mount up again. We have to move fast now.
Oh, it's hot. Can't we find some place shady and wait until it cools off?
I wish we could, but we don't have any choice.
Come on, Leah. We can do a little more.
Once they were all moving, the kid brought up the rear, pushing them along as fast as he dared. He looked at the sun, quartering down toward the horizon. They were still following the Apache's trail, but he could tell that the tracks were angling toward the northwest. The war party had circled around the settlement of Sago, he recalled. That had added some distance to their trek, distance that the kid and his companions couldn't afford. Not only that, but if they crossed into New Mexico territory away from the town, Guzman might be angry enough to disregard the border and come after them. The kid didn't think Guzman would bring his rurales all the way into Sago. Such an invasion of U.S. soil could cause a lot of problems between the states and Mexico and draw too much attention to Guzman's activities. His bosses in Mexico City were willing to let him do what he wanted, but they might not be so inclined if he caused a war, or even the threat of a war. Those thoughts flashed through the kid's mind as he pushed the dun past the other horses.
Follow me.
He turned away from the Apache's trail, heading what he hoped was due north. That would take them to Sago by the fastest possible route. Minutes passed. The sun dropped lower in the sky.
Kid!
He looked back without stopping. The dust cloud was considerably closer. Close enough that he could make out the riders at the base of it.
All right. Gallop straight ahead. Don't look back. Just keep going no matter what you hear. Don't stop until you're in the town. The north side of the town, past the public well in the middle of the street. That's the border.
What are you going to do, kid?
I'll be right behind you. Don't worry.
I don't believe you. You're going to try to slow them down, aren't you?
I have the best horse.
I'm staying with you.
We're wasting time arguing. Jess, you lead the way. Take these women back to where they'll be safe.
Kid.
Otherwise, it's all for nothing.
She gave him a look that was half angry, half stricken.
Come on! We gotta make these horses run!
Jess set off at a gallop, with the other three women trailing close behind her. The kid sat there on the dun, looking back and forth between the women and the dust cloud raised by the pursuers for a minute or so before he swung down from the saddle. His sharps was still in its sheath, strapped to the saddle under the right stirrup. He pulled it out. He moved around the dun so he could rest the barrel across the saddle. The kid had practiced in the past, so the horse knew what was going on and stood still. Resting his cheek against the stock, the kid aimed at the dark mass of riders about a half a mile away. He angled the barrel upward slightly to make the bullet carry better. The rifle's heavy kick made the kid take a step back even though he had braced himself. He caught his balance and peered toward the onrushing horsemen. Suddenly, there was a disturbance among the riders. The kid was too far away to make out any details, but it seemed the men had paused and started to mill around. He opened the sharps, slapped another cartridge in the breech, and aimed. He didn't wait to see the results. The unbroken line of pursuers definitely had stopped and become more jagged as men tried to control nervously dancing horses, while at the same time glancing at the sky and wondering if the next slug to fall from the heavens would have their name on it. The kid didn't expect to stop Guzman, Kelly, and the others. Since the distant riders decided to start their charge again, the kid shoved the buffalo gun back in its sheath and pulled the Winchester. The repeater didn't have the range of the sharps, but if he waited a minute, the pursuers would be in range.
Won't be long now, fella. Just a minute or two and you'll be able to run again. Run for all you're worth.
The sun was about to touch the mountains to the west. Its glare, redder than ever because it was low in the sky, washed over the landscape. The kid decided he should empty the Winchester's magazine. As he lowered the rifle, he saw a little plume of dust and dirt erupt from the ground off to his left. Bullets were hitting around him.
Time to go.
He jammed the Winchester back in the boot and swung up into the saddle. As he leaned forward, he heeled the horse into a run. The dunt stretched his legs and flashed across the ground. The sombrero flew off the kid's head and sailed away. He let it go without worrying about it. The need for deception was long since past. All that mattered now was speed. The sun started to sink behind the peaks. Long shadows stretched across the desert. And in one of those shadows, the twinkle of lights. Sago. Had to be, because that was the only settlement in those parts. The kid sent the dun in that direction, hoping that Jess and the other women had found the town. He didn't see any sign of them ahead of him. Maybe they were already safely there. He turned his head to look over his shoulder. The dun was running gallantly, but the kid thought the pursuers were closer. They were cutting the gap because their horses were fresher, even if only by a little. The settlement was half a mile away, but the rurales and the scalp hunters were only a quarter mile behind him, the kid estimated. It would be close, very close. Even if Guzman and his men stopped short of the border, those same restraints didn't mean anything to Kelly, Chess, Valdez, and Mateo. They might chase the kid all the way into Sago. They might even try to find the women and take them prisoner again. There was no real law in this border settlement to stop them. The kid was the only one who could stop them, and he'd probably have to kill them to do it. On they pounded in the deadly race. The sun was completely behind the mountains, and dusk began to settle quickly over the landscape. More lights appeared in Sago. When the kid looked back again, the riders were only a couple of hundred yards behind him. Muzzle flashes twinkled like fireflies in the twilight as they threw lead at him. The kid was close enough to the town to be able to make out the buildings. He could even see the well with its water tank and trough in the middle of the street. The people were gathered on the other side of it, and from the size of the crowd, he knew that Jess and the other women had reached the settlement and told everyone what was going on. Relief flooded through him at that realization. It also appeared to the kid that most of the inhabitants of the southern side of town had retreated north of the well. They didn't trust the rurales. The southernmost buildings of the settlement flashed past. Another few seconds, and the kid would reach the border. The dun collapsed from exhaustion, tumbling to the ground in a wild confusion of flailing legs. The kid kicked his feet free of the stirrups and crashed down to the ground with stunning force. He rolled over a couple of times and came to a stop on his belly. He lifted his head and saw the riders bearing down on him, close enough to recognize Guzman. The rurale commander had led the pursuit himself, as the kid expected he might. Riding next to Guzman was Enrique Kelly, with the other scalp hunters close behind. There was nothing like having several dozen killers thundering toward him for clearing a man's mind. The kid surged to his feet and slapped leather. As he started shooting the colt, he ran for the well, the closest cover. He went up and over it in a dive, carrying him across the border and back into the United States. That wasn't stopping Guzman and the others. Bullets flew across the border, and the citizens of Sago quickly scattered and hunted cover. Some of the men who were armed began returning the fire from the rurales. The kid had thought Guzman would stop short of creating an international incident, but obviously he'd been wrong. The kid glanced over his shoulder and saw the cavalry galloping into town from the north. The kid was surprised that Lieutenant Nicholson and his patrol were still there, but he was glad to see them. He ducked behind the water trough again as competing storms of lead scythed through the air above him. Several riders galloped past the well. The kid twisted around and saw Kelly, Chess, and Valdez, along with Captain Guzman, the guns in their hands, tracked toward him. He sat up with his back against the water trough and fired. His bullet drove into Kelly's chest and made the leader of the scalp hunters fall out of his saddle. The kid glanced to his right. Jess Ritter had emerged from one of the buildings, still dressed in the rurale uniform, and the Winchester she carried spouted flame as she levered off round after round. Chess doubled over, and at least one bullet ripped through his body. Valdez threw his hands in the air and slid out of his saddle. Guzman charged the kid on horseback. The captain's revolver was empty, so he threw it aside and ripped a saber from its scabbard at his waist. But before he could reach him, the kid brought up the Colt and pulled the trigger. The slug hit him right between the eyes. He slid off the saddle as the horses galloped by. The kid stayed where he was for a few seconds before he realized the shooting had stopped. He looked up to see that he was surrounded by blue-uniformed cavalry troopers. Lieutenant Nicholson was among them. The lieutenant raised the revolver in his hand and pointed it at the kid.
Mr. Morgan, you are under arrest.
Before the kid could respond to that, Jess elbowed her way through the ring of troopers and forced herself between Nicholson and the kid.
Are you insane? You can't arrest him. He saved us. He went into Mexico and rescued us from those monsters.
Exactly, ma'am. Mr. Morgan crossed the border without proper authorization.
The cavalrymen began to step back and come to attention as another officer strode up. He was a short, wiry man with a salt-and-pepper beard.
Lieutenant, we've talked about this.
Nicholson holstered his pistol and stood stiffly at attention.
Yes, sir, but it still seems to me...
I don't care how it seems to you, son.
The other officer turned and extended a hand to the kid.
Let me help you up, Morgan.
The kid clasped the man's hand and got to his feet.
I'm obliged to you, sir.
Colonel Stillwell, I rode in with a patrol of my own a couple days ago and found the lieutenant waiting here in case you came back from your little jaunt south of the border. When he told me who you were and that you were trying to save some kidnapped American women, well, I figured if anybody could bring him back, it'd be you. So I decided to wait a little while just in case. I didn't expect you to bring a bunch of rurales back with you, too.
There's going to be trouble over this, sir. We engaged Mexican troops without authorization.
By my order, Lieutenant. My authorization. I'll take the responsibility, and by God, after 40 years of fighting Indians and outlaws out here on the frontier, if anybody tells me I'm not allowed to defend American soil from a foreign invasion, I'll retire, blast it!
The rurales didn't actually cross the border.
That one did.
Stillwell pointed at Guzman's body.
And the others fired over the border and endangered American citizens.
Edwin Sago stepped up.
I'll testify to that, Colonel, if I need to.
Very well, sir. But it's all highly irregular.
When you've been out here for a while, son, you may see things differently. Irregular is the order of the day on the frontier. Now, Morgan, I bet you could use a drink and something to eat.
Yes, sir, I could.
Jess was beside the kid, smiling. He slipped an arm around her, partly out of affection, and partly because he was so tired it felt good to have someone to lean on.
We'll all pitch in and clean up that mess on the other side of town, Colonel.
The kid looked in that direction. Some of the rurales had fled, but a number of them were dead. Suddenly, at the far end of town, a rider moved into the light that spilled through an open window. The kid tensed as he recognized Mateo. He hadn't seen the Yaqui during the fighting. Mateo appeared to be unharmed, and he had a rifle in his hand. For a second, the kid thought he might lift the gun and take a last shot. Mateo raised the Winchester, holding it above his head for a second. He wheeled his horse and vanished into the gathering darkness. Mateo was done with this fight.
Come on. The others want to see you, and thank you.
Two weeks later, he and Jess sat in the luxurious lobby of the Camino Real Hotel in El Paso. A couple of years earlier, Conrad Browning had met with Frank Morgan at that hotel to ask for Frank's help. And that was the beginning of the growing friendship and respect between father and son. The kid hadn't been back since. The skirmish at Sago had been brushed under the rug, as far as the kid knew. Maybe there had been a few angry letters exchanged between Washington and Mexico City. Maybe not. None of that mattered to him.
I can't help but wonder how a drifting gunfighter can afford to stay in a fancy place like this, let alone pay for four women to start new lives. It wouldn't do any good to ask, though, would it?
Everybody has secrets.
You know just about everything there is to know about me, kid. The good and the bad.
I don't know anything bad.
Most people wouldn't see it that way.
Most people are damned fools in one way or another.
I suppose you're right about that. Speaking of damned fools, are you sure I can't talk you into going to Dallas with me?
Lee is going to be staying with you for a while. The two of you will do fine.
I know. But if you ever change your mind...
I'll know where to find you.
The kid got to his feet, holding a black Stetson in his hand. The rurale's uniform was long gone. He wore a black suit, white shirt, and string tie. And the Colt on his hip, of course. He was never without it. Jess came into his arms and hugged him, resting her head against his chest for a moment.
Thank you.
You've said that plenty times already. No need to say it again.
Never enough. Come see me sometime.
Count on it.
The Dunn was waiting outside. Other than a bit of lameness that disappeared with rest, the Dunn hadn't been injured in the fall. The kid was grateful for that. He and the horse made a good team. The Loner, Book 12, Inferno, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2012 by J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Julianne Elliott, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Tim Pabone, Bradley Smith, Nick DePinto, Joe Brack, Michael Glenn, Thomas Keegan, James Lewis, Kimberly Gilbert, Nanette Savard, Scott McCormick, Patrick Bussink, Colleen Delaney, Tim Getman, Terrence Aselford, Michael John Casey, and Richard Rowan. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and book adaptation by Nathaniel Perry. The Loner theme was composed by Nathaniel Perry, with additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Loner, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Blood Valley, a Cotton Pickens Western, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another thrilling title in graphic audio.
What kind of sheriff are you anyway?
Where will it stop? Who will stop the crime wave? Is our bank next? Will our citizens lie dead in the streets? Fire him!
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickens, Book 4, Massacre Mountain.
Some got blown. I got a whiff of powder or something.
I'll get Sanders. You stay here and stay armed. Don't know what's in the building or the bushes.
Having the right man wearing the star is important to a business like mine. I sell good times, Sheriff. There's lawmen that just don't like anyone having a good time in their towns, and then there's trouble.
Arrest the whole lot! Arrest Ralston! We can't have this! Doubtful's reputation is ruined!
For what?
For public indecency.
I don't know any law like that, Mr. Mayor.
Then invent one! I want them out of my town by morning!
Arrest them for lewd behavior. They were virtually disrobing the girl with their gaze, demeaning her, reducing her to their own animal lust.
Well, that's kind of nice, ma'am. I'm still sheriff, far as I can figure, and I aim to get my badge back real quick now. And if I do, you'll get your money back. You put me in an opera house with naked women, and I cease to think. I don't even have a pipsqueak of a thought between my ears.
That is how we all are in the presence of the divine. You have eyes for ambrosia.
I hear you want to marry me. So, let's talk.
Name your deal.
I'll marry you for 1 month.
I don't think I could swing that.
What do you think I am? I don't believe in free love.
You're expensive, all right.
Cotton Pickens, Book 4, Massacre Mountain.
Available now in graphic audio.
Maybe I should go get myself baptized before they shut me down. Once you've been pushed underwater, wearing all white, they leave you alone.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.